Aussies love the bush, but sometimes the bloody bush doesn't love us back. I'm John Harper, just a simple joker talking about why mental health is everybody's business and what to do if you think a mate is struggling.
This podcast is a Room 3 production and brought to you by our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Farm Business Resilience Program team, and also Seraphim Machinery. They are there for all of your seeding and tillage needs. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature, and we recommend seeking professional health advice from your GP or medical professional. If you're struggling with your mental health, please visit the show notes or matehelpingmate.org.au for links to trusted service providers across the country. You'll be hearing the lived experiences of everyday folk in rural and remote Australia. The language can be strong at times, and references of suicide may upset some people. So consider who's within earshot when listening.
Hi ho, podcasters. John Harper from Mate Helping Mate. Today's episode is quite significant for me. I'm well outside my comfort zone. Normally we record in a controlled atmosphere. This episode is at Witten Malthouse and deals with the Witten Darlington Point community. And in that area, there's a phenomenal amount of agricultural pursuits go on, from cotton growing, rice growing, fruit, vegetables, fat lambs, all of this at home there. And yet in this area of such, in our minds, abundance, we have the challenges you people in dryland Australia have with climate. There's been the challenges of drought, of floods, of low commodity prices, of high cost inputs, all of them. And this community, which is no different to your communities out there, they've been knee-deep in grief. There's been issues with loss to suicide, yet they're still here. And the buggers are still prepared to want to help each other and to help you out there. So I am really excited about getting this information out to you people. So what was our structure in recording this episode? Well, the theory was based on Q&A, so having a panel, having an audience, and having interaction. We put out over the social media expressions of interest for being involved in these community-led podcast episodes. And from the Witten Collyambly area, we got a stack of positive replies. And from them, we did a little survey. And the survey came back with three main themes that they would like us to be focused on. And that was stigma. That was strategies, positive strategies. And that was support team. We had four local jokers who I coerced. No, I didn't. They actually volunteered to sit up the front and to be open and to be honest in their responses to any queries from the community, and I'm proud to say they did a bloody good job. The reason I asked Kim is that she is a partner in irrigation farming with a husband, but she is also very well known in the community as being very active with social connecting activities. Then there's Jodie Heath, the local butcher in Darlington Point. The passing of his father to suicide and facing grief from a young age means he has a wide understanding of mental well-being struggles associated with grief and loss. Jodie's positive impact on the community, acknowledged by all, spans from brightening customers' days at the shop to volunteering in mentoring programs. Our third participant is a new mother and peer support worker, Lexi Heath, who also happens to be Jodie's daughter. Lexi has dealt with chronic mental health struggles growing up. She lived with the negative impacts of mental health stigma within the community, and as a result, she felt very isolated and alone. These days, she has a passion for helping others. She is especially concerned about homelessness and youth mental health. She doesn't want anybody to feel alone as she felt growing up. And the last of them is Rob Horton. Now, Rob will say that he's an extrovert. Sometimes we need to think outside of the box, and Rob Houghton has certainly done that. Despite facing the adversity that irrigation farmers, cotton producers, rice growers have faced, he has been able to maintain a positive mental well-being. He's passionate and very active in participating in and supporting community activities. He's a different sort of boat. So let's kick things off, settle back, and here we go. You're in for the ride.
So first off the line, and I'm pardon the bright lights on his head, but we got Rob.
No bad and hair jokes, John.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, John. My name's Rob Houghton. I'm a local farmer. I've wanted to be a farmer all my life, and so it's been a quite an easy career for me to put my heart into. I have had some challenges along the way, mainly because I'm an extreme extrovert, and it's a very lonely place sometimes on a farm. In my early days of farming, that wasn't as mechanised as what it is now, so we always worked in teams, and I loved that. I just loved being a part of a team and creating fun, having fun with the team. It just didn't seem like a job. Then we became smarter and more mechanised, and we used technology to get across bigger areas, and I saw less of the people around me. I really enjoyed the challenge of implementing the technology on farm, but what I found was that I wasn't getting that social interaction that I was in my younger days, and I was yearning for it. I was pining for someone to tell some of my best jokes to, and I wasn't getting that. And my wife, Jenny, if you can put your hand up, Jen, she copped all my jokes when I got home at night, and I'm pretty sure she didn't think they were all that funny. But
all right, Jenny, you've got an opportunity to put this fella up, and we'll do a sub thing for Farmer Wants a Wife if you want to fail. But look, Rob, we'll talk about some more of that in strategies and stuff.
Thanks, John.
We'll throw to the next.
I'm Kim. I grew up in Leeton, a Leetonite, a few Leeton faces here, not yet a local in Collyamberley. I've been there for about 15 years, married to my wonderful husband, Ben, who's here, and I'm a nurse, involved in lots of community events, and that's something that I really enjoy doing, putting back into community things, and we've got three beautiful kids, so pleased to be a part of something where we can all get something out of it.
Jody Heath. I grew up in Darlington Point. I'm also the local butcher. Have been for about 27 years now. So, married, lovely wife, two wonderful children. Yeah, I think it's a great thing to get together and talk about mental health. I've had a few struggles myself, and also with the butcher shop, you're sort of an unofficial counsellor. Everyone that walks through the door has always got a story to tell. They don't give you last week's lotto numbers, but, you know, they've always got something on top of their chest that they'd like to, you know, divulge into conversation. So hopefully when they all leave, I can leave a smile on their face and, yeah.
And anybody want to order sausages or anything? There's the thing, okay? Put order in. So lucky last.
Lucky last. So my name's Lexi. I am actually Jody's daughter. I am born and raised in Darlington Point. And with my own personal struggles, I found a love for working in mental health. So that's sort of where my career path ended up. I work in Griffith. I'm heading back soon. I have a 6-month-old. So, I head back soon to work with my passion. So glad to be here, and thanks for everyone for coming.
So very quickly, any of yous, I don't know whether you really know why you're on this panel, but why? Nervous?
Yeah.
Why are you sitting up here? Do you think you're going to make a difference?
Well, I hope.
Would like to think so.
I hope
so.
If you could just help one person make a difference, I think that's a big step.
And it's united we stand, divided we fall. We've got four people from this community who've got the guts to get up off their ass and try and make a positive difference. We did a rough little survey, and we came up with three target areas we want to talk about, because mental wellbeing is so big, it's just amazing. Their stigma, their strategies, and their support team. Poor old Kim, she cops a raw deal. She's first up. Stigma. What's your thoughts around stigma?
I'm actually pleased that this is one of the topics. I think it's something that is synonymous with mental health. You hear that word stigma a lot. But I do wonder whether it's something that's overused and perhaps understood, whether people actually understand what it means. I think it's important to remember that everyone's perception of the same situation will be different. And whilst we're often thinking that, gee, somebody else must think this about me or that about me, the reality of the situation probably is that everyone's got enough going on in their own life to really worry about it. But it's something that we tend to overwork in our own mind in lots of different situations.
Stigma's like a label that, or a badge that you can wear under your shirt, you know. You've got this mental thought of what people are actually, what you think that they're talking about or what you think that they're thinking, you know. You're sort of, it's all going on in your mind. You need to sort of stop thinking those sort of thoughts because, yeah, it's not going to be any good for you.
And it works two ways. So on the individual, we fear what other people think. But sometimes stigma prevents us helping other people. Lexi, you copped it hard as a young girl, 14 year older.
Yeah, stigma affected me. I was too scared to go to reach out for help. Lucky I had a few good family and friends that sort of pushed me in the right direction, but definitely there was stigma attached to reaching out and receiving the help that we needed, whether it be from counsellors or just a normal GP appointment.
But sometimes it's Vicky versa, isn't it? At that stage you were at a boarding school,
mm-hmm.
and yep. Did you feel others were open enough to talk about and help you through your journey, or you think they were hesitant because they weren't sure?
I think they were very hesitant. They were scared of saying the wrong things.
And hurting you.
Yeah.
And that made your journey tougher, do you feel?
I think it made tougher because if someone just said something, it might have been better than saying nothing. Yeah.
So mental health or poor mental health is a problem. And stigma is preventing us to deal with that problem. Rob, in his intro, talked about how he enjoyed being on the farm, being part of the team. So when you had a physical problem on the thing, did you have to solve it yourself or the team solved it?
Yeah, look, it was always a team approach. So there was always someone to consult and get the problem solved. Depending on what it was, if I hurt myself, again, I'll get back to Jen. She was a nurse in her early years and I would come home with a leg hanging off and she would just look at it and go, well, I've seen worse than that. You'll be right. So I didn't get a lot of sympathy, John, with those sort of problems. But yeah, having other people around and being able to talk about any issue was something that I really treasured in my younger days.
So you had a tight team on the farm that could deal with any physical problem. Didn't flow over into your mental wellbeing?
Yeah, look, my approach was just every day to try and have a bit of fun. It didn't, as I said before in my intro, it didn't seem like work. It wasn't a workplace. It was a fun place, and I was lucky enough to have uncles that would even make it fun for us. We would have competitions to see who could pull out the daggiest lamb and crutch, and we're actually engaged in this stupid competition all day. And at the end of the day, we'd have a bit of a laugh about it. But there was never anything that got on top of me in terms of my mental health. And I was fortunate that that was the case.
So any comments from anybody out there? We're thrown out into the ether.
Thank you, John, and your great work that you're doing, probably directed at Lexi at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
Since you've gone through things, stigma is actually the hardest thing to accept. Because you feel you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so my question is, how did you overcome that, thinking it was you, but you needed support?
I think it's just accepting the help is a big thing. Once you accept the help, it sort of just comes naturally. Everyone is there to help you. And once you've accepted it, it sort of just flows on from that, I think. Yeah.
Great job for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I suppose that starts coming down to the interesting part. We've just started to raise and move on to strategies. So stigma is fear. It's the fear of what other people think of characteristics, maybe symptoms that we display, and that prevents us putting in place strategies, perhaps accepting help at this stage. So we want to flow over into strategies, and all of these people up here have different levels of where they went in regards to their mental well-being. we don't necessarily, well, we don't want to dwell on the specific stories. We want to look at the positive ways they've got from the lows back up. So we're talking about resilience, what sort of strategies. Joker here, I'm not politically correct, so I say things but I don't mean to insult him. So this idiot gets up at 4:30 in the morning to go and do exercises, but not just by himself. He goes in with a group.
It's not 4:40, it's 4:41 I get up. that's the time I've set. I'm fortunate enough to, coming out of that story about my youth and having people around me, it disappeared because farming became more mechanised and all that sort of stuff. I knew I had to create community for me to be happy. And so it was a pretty selfish venture. So I started going off farm and getting involved in agri-politics and other things alongside the farming. And it occurred to me that there were less and less young people around. So we needed another way to create this community where people could get together and do something other than talk about the work, the farming, or the, you know, the worries. That can happen. But initially, we just got together and we started a group, and we were exercising down at the local fire shed. The exercise was great. It was important. But what was probably more important was we were getting together, having a bit of a hit out. And then in the stretch session at the end, we were just chatting away about things. And I found that people were just unloading. And anyone who came into that environment, whether it was to see what we were doing or whatever, went away thinking, wow, look what you've created. Not me, but look what that group has created without being aware. It's so important for every member of that group to be a part of that every Monday and Wednesday morning.
So just cutting in, so can you see when he first started talking about stigma, he started talking about on the farm, the team, uncles, whatever, so family. Over a period of time, that support team or that way of gearing himself up disappeared. So for him to be happy again, he's recreated another family, basically. But I wanted more the individual strategy. So the stressing yourself literally, physically, and a mental stress each day.
So at the moment, I've got this fad where I'm having cold showers.
Excuse me, hand up, who has cold showers here? Yeah, a couple. But anyway, this is the strategy behind it. So
it's about putting your body through a bit of stress. It's only very, like, just ripping a Band-Aid off, really. And once you get used to the cold water, it's not too bad. So that's one thing. Another thing is I like to get up and go for a bike ride in town, which is about 15 k's away, cold, frosty morning. It's hard to get out of bed and make yourself do that. And on the way in, I'm thinking, this is hard, but I'm loving it. This is a challenge, but I just love it. And on the ride home, I solve all my problems, all the things that was keeping me up at night. Well, problems become projects and challenges. They're not problems anymore. So my whole mental approach changes, and I know it's because of the endorphins and the fun that I've had in the morning. No one can take that away from me. I've had that.
So can you see that attitude, say the cold showers, is about when you're down in mental well-being, it's all negative. I can't do this. I can't do that. You do little challenges where you kick a goal. So you get your brain starting to think, yes, I can. Yes, I can. Like the little engine going up the bloody hill. That's the strategy he's put in place. Have you got any strategies you know of, you travelling reasonably well?
I think it is about putting in the effort, even when you are travelling well. And I guess it's really the same as your physical health. If you wait to do something about the amount of sugar that you eat, only when you get diagnosed with diabetes, it's probably not the best time to start, is it? Probably need to be, you know, keeping these things in check beforehand. But I think you've mentioned it really becomes a symbiotic relationship. You started going to the gym and creating a community for your own benefit, but in actual fact, you know, the old adage of a problem shared is a problem halved, you're all doing that. And by the time that you've had a chin wag with everybody at the gym or the people that you go riding with or whatever, it works backwards and forwards.
So that's part of strategies that they've used. I find these strategies, these two, quite interesting because they're family members. And for me, I would think that as individuals, they'd be similar sorts of strategies. When you're feeling a bit flat,
yeah,
a bit low, what do you do, Jody? Well, something to do with the river?
I'd lock the front of the shop. I walk out the back lane and I go for a walk down the bush. I sit at the river and, yeah, just relax and good walk down through there. It's great. Soothes the soul. Yeah, really, really good.
Throw rocks in the river. Watch the ripples.
Throw sticks, rocks. Listen to the sounds. It's brilliant. Yeah. Soothing. Mm.
And yeah. You're just like your dad, Lexi? What's your strategy?
My strategy is probably to get out on the footy field and tackle a few girls or tackle in bags or and then head to the pub after for a good chin wag and a good gossip and catch up on everything.
And, I mean, we're only just touching on strategies, but it's looking at what makes you feel good. We've put up a couple of different ones here, but they don't all hit the mark with all of yous. You know, is it being able to get off and enjoy nature, looking at birds or bird watching or whatever? For me, I ride a motorbike. I don't have to ride with heaps of blokes and stuff, but it's different for everybody, and that's what it's about. Actually, Lexi and Jody both took their strategies a bit to another level. So that was their individual strategies, but they've also started to use other means of building their well-being. So boys to the bush?
Yeah. I work at Tikandi out at it's Tikandi Innaburrah. It's a home for probably, I think they're 12 to 15-year-old Aboriginal boys, and they're out there for 3 months at a time. They do a full term, and it's more like a cultural camp. They learn to make didgeridoos. They do all different sorts of stuff. They learn dancing, learn all about their culture. But they learn, they go to mental health things as well. You know, they go to drumbeat. It's a place where they sort of, they sort of get these big African drums and they sort of make different beats, but then they sort of speak as they're doing it sort of thing, you know, and they sort of give up what's sort of worrying them or what's bothering them sort of thing. It's different things like that. So, yeah.
So you're the font of all information, so you're just feeding them? Do you get anything out of it?
Oh, I love it, yeah. Yeah, no, I get a great kick out of it. Yeah, no, they've all got a story to tell too, and I tell you what, there's a few good stories out there, but yeah, no, it's really, really good.
Have you learned anything from them, Jokers?
Oh, I've learned, don't take life too serious, you know.
So you've got a drum?
No, I don't have a drum. But
you haven't taught them butchery skills, have you?
No, but I've had a few interested in learning, actually, so I don't know if I'd trust half of them with a knife. But
so just show the people your fingers, please.
Yeah, I've still got 10.
I'm not sure how good a butchery is, but he's still got all his fingers. Lexi, you've taken it to another level as well. What do you do?
With my job, I help people find accommodation. So I'm dealing a lot with the homeless side of things. But I think although we're not finding them a house, we give them a little bit of light and shed a little bit of light on the situation. And if I can sort of make their day, they make my day, really.
And I run past Lexi about this. She was talking that it's very hard to get accommodation for anybody. And I said, okay, homeless person, you get them into a tin shed. What do they feel like? And you said something, even if they get a little apartment, a cabinet that's like a bloody dog kennel, what are they like?
They think it's like a penthouse. They love it. Anything that they can call their own, and they feel so fulfilled that they've got their own space. So I think it's important.
And that makes you feel good. So they feel valued because somebody else is looking after them to the best of her abilities. And it's not about giving them mansions, whatever. It's the same with you. Putting in place strategies to help your mates. It doesn't have to be all fancy fickle. It could be just a hug. You just don't know. When you're at that point, isn't it really, it's that perception. You've got this negative perception that nobody cares about you and there's no future. So really at the base of our strategies, if we're helping other people, is that. How do we instill that we care about people, care about others? And how, if we can keep getting up in the morning, there's a better future. And wouldn't you say, who knows better to help your mates than your mates?
I think it's about expectations too, other people's expectations, but our expectation. I know that certainly in my professional role, as soon as a problem's presented, I go into problem solver mode, like, I'm going to fix this. But sometimes people don't actually want you to fix the problem. They don't want you to find them a 3-bedroom home. They just want for you to hear what they're saying and to acknowledge that that must be a pretty crummy spot to be.
Yeah, just to get it off their chest.
Exactly, yeah. And I know that that's something that I have to often keep in mind, is that as soon as someone mentions, oh, you know, I'm struggling to get enough groceries last week or something, I'm straight onto, well, let's organise a food hamper. But actually, I think they just want to, sometimes you just want to tell someone that you haven't quite met the mark. And what mother wants to not be able to get the groceries that they want each week, but by just sort of admitting to someone that, you know, I didn't quite meet the mark last week, and for someone else to say, you know, can happen to us all, sometimes that's enough. Like, we can just be just good enough. We don't have to be up here all the time.
So have you any strategies how you can break through the negative effect of stigma? That's whether yourself in asking, can you trick yourself? Have you got strategies that you deal with? Or do you have strategies on how you approach people that don't know that they've got a problem? Stigma prevents them from seeing a problem. Have any of you thought about that, reflected on it?
Yeah, I've reflected on that. I feel like I'm such a disappointment to some of my friends who do suffer from depression, because I can't fix that. I can empathise as much as I can, but I don't know what they're going through. I certainly take my hat off to anyone who deals with depression and mental illness on a daily basis over many years. It's the most courageous thing someone can do, is get up and attack that beast every day. And I don't know how they do it. So I really do take my hat off to them. It is a battle that I'm sure every individual doesn't know why it's affecting them, but it is, for whatever reason, and they're dealing with it. So just hats off to the people that are dealing with those problems. But I can't, apart from, I think I'm learning as I'm getting older, I'm approaching 60, so I should know, start to learn a bit. And I think Kim's touched on it, the three of them have touched on it, is just listening, sitting there shutting up and listening. If I know myself, if someone's willing to listen to me and my problems, I know I go away feeling better, and I'm not sure about them. But that is a skill that takes a bit of honing, is just shutting up and listening. Yeah, that's a skill that I think we can all improve on.
So, Jody, there must be different times when customers come into your shop,
yep,
they're flat. Now, you definitely, as a butcher, don't try to solve their problems.
No.
But how do they generally go out the door, and why? How does that happen?
Oh, well, usually I try to get a smile out of them before they leave the door. I just ask them a few questions. How's the family been? How's things going? You know, what have you been up to lately? And as I said, everyone's got a story to tell. Everyone wants to sort of have that conversation. And, yeah, if they can leave with a smile on their face, well, I think you've done a good job.
They don't give them free sausages or anything else?
Oh, if they got no money, they can get free sausages. That's no worry at all.
So just your time.
Yeah, that's all they want. People just need good conversation.
So how do you read them? How do you know if they're flat?
Oh, well, with your locals and that sort of stuff, you know, they're sort of, I think everyone knows their sort of, everyone's attitude and the point, you know, whether he's a happy person, whether he's a sad, lonely soul, you know, sort of, you can tell sort of thing.
So you believe everybody, ordinary people,
yep,
have a bit of an idea if somebody's wobbly up on the wall, like old Humpy. What are some of the signs you see?
When they're quiet, reserved, someone that usually walks in that's really bubbly, it's got a sort of outgoing nature, and then they walk in, they go, how you going? You know, there's something wrong, you know. It's only just a quick, what's going on, mate? You're not yourself, you know, something like that. It's only just a quick thing, and then away they go.
Plus, the other thing is that those people that you know you. So yeah, they know how you operate.
Yeah, probably right.
And take this the right way, that he's silly enough to ask them how they're going, which gives them the opportunity. So once again, you use your relationship of mateship and that of going forward. So we're right for
no,
in the mission,
are we?
We
have a question from Chris.
Oh, we have a question. Geez, I was busting for a break.
I'll keep it quick, John. Jody, how do you keep motivated if you're having a bad day and you've got people coming in? You're always smiling, you're You know what I mean? You cheer people up. How do you keep doing it if you're down?
I put it at the back of my mind and try and deal with it later on in the day, but make sure you deal with it. Don't take things home. Don't take things to bed. If you can sort of work something out, yeah, just do that. But, I'm like everyone else. We all get down and outs, but no one wants to come into a shop where someone's going, "How you going? What would you like?" You know, you present yourself in that sort of manner. But, yeah, no, we all have bad days. But, yeah, I go home and, I don't know, the wife, we have a conversation. She usually tunes me up if I'm sort of getting out of hand, you know. Get back on track, get out there and mow the lawn or something, get up, go and have a shower. You know, you sort of don't get a chance to sit around and dwell. She's a pretty solid taskmaster, actually.
I think what Sato's saying, though, is that it's a consistently good place to visit, and I reckon there's probably people that go there, they're not just after their meat, they're probably after a bit of a chat and yarn, and they know that they'll get that there. There is a sense of community.
Yeah.
So are you saying that if you put in place positive strategies, a positive attitude, it's a two-way win-win? So if you're flat at work, or Lexi, you're flat at work and you do some good at work and make a homeless person a bit happier than they were, even if you're flat, you tend to forget that.
I think it recharges our batteries or fills our cup too. If we can help somebody else, we feel fulfilled in what we're doing. I do anyway.
So I see a lot of heads nodding, so I'm presuming most of you understand that kind of concept, that if we can get off our ass and help somebody, we actually help ourselves. Even if we're in a good place, we maintain that. So any other comments from that? We got one over in the corner.
How you going? We're doing a lot of work at the moment with psychological safety in our industry, and that's very important. And I just want to congratulate all of you guys for creating that environment for other people to come in. You know, something as simple as a butcher shop can be that psychological safe environment that people come in, going for a run at stupid o'clock in the morning. It's up there. Nurses, you know, everything. It's, just a comment more than a question was, psychological safety is a massive thing at the moment, and I think everyone needs to create those environments and make them normal. As they are, and encourage people to come on the journey. So, well done.
I'm a mental health advocate that roam about a fair bit in rural and remote, and what we've found, I've done a lot of stuff with the mines, really rural, remote, fly in, fly out, and even the big businesses have started to realise, while their focus is on money, they realise that a happy miner is a happy bottom line. For us in the bush, it comes back simply to happy wife, happy life. So if we have happy mates, we have a happy life. If we have a happy community, it's the same. So we got another joker down here, yep.
I feel that one of the best strategies I've ever had was getting an assistant dog. Assistant dog, it breaks some of the stigma. It lets people know that you are struggling. Now, they are one of the best things, assistant dogs these days. They wake you up through sleeps so when you're having bad times, and when you're down and out, they're there beside you. To me, that's one of the best strategies we've got out there at the moment.
And would you say, mate, your assistant dog never spoke to you? It was her actions, whatever. And this is what we're saying. Sometimes the simplest strategies, actions, a dog, okay, is as good as anything else. So what we tend to find, I think, is that ordinary people like us tend to overthink stuff. We've got to go back to the simple stuff, mates, family, community. Would you not agree?
By letting people know, if you can take that step to just say, look, I'm really actually not traveling that well at the moment. I don't know if people are more lenient on you, but, you know, you're sort of saying that having the assistance dog maybe gave people a clue that maybe he's not traveling so well. I think we can all be a little bit more accommodating. I mean, we probably need to be more accommodating regardless, but when you know that something's, you know, if someone comes to work and they say, oh, do you know what, I've got a bit of the flu or something going on, well, you say, look, I'll do the legwork today and you do the bookwork, we'll swap around tomorrow. But if you've got no idea what's going on for that person, it can be really hard to be accommodating, I guess, be a friend.
You got another one? Here we go.
John, I found a really good strategy is that when someone is down and out and they finally do tell you, you've got to assure them that they're not the only people who are down and out. They're not the only people who are suffering. There's other people out there. I think once they hear that they're not the only people that are in that drum, that there are other people, I think they want to get some help. But the stigma is that they think that they're the only people that are feeling that way. Everyone else is normal and I'm not.
So once again, our strategies are about that is probably at the core of our strategies is to let people know that they're not on their Pat Malone, or we're not on our Pat Malone even, that we work as Rob does with a crew, with mates riding push bikes. We have customers that we work at helping them, but we let them help us. You know, we step outside of the block. And this is the only one I take a bit of exception to, is Lexi smashing other girls on the football field to go. But, I mean, sometimes that is what's necessary. So it's interesting. You have to understand yourself as well when you start implementing these strategies. For me, I suppose some of the things that affect me is anger when I was shearing. You know, I'd get angry and everything, and then I'd be flat because I wouldn't shear as many. So I worked out a strategy that worked for me. So instead of belting the hell out of the sheep, I would go outside and go, eh, eh, eh. And different times the owners would come out and say, what the hell are you doing? And I said, if I didn't do that, I'd give you a flogging, mate, because they're your bloody sheep. You know, so I mean, you've got to look at your own personality. Would that be right and work out the strategies? I mean, if poor mental well-being is about anger and frustration, what kind of strategies do we do? You know, this fella, I don't know whether he feels anger or frustration, but obviously he can do it pumping out on that bike if he wants to. You know, Jody does it with the bloody chops on the thing, you know, if they're all mashed up chops. You know, he may be putting in place a strategy with your meat. I don't know. Would you agree with that, Kim?
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, everyone does have their own strategy and, yeah, I do like a good chin wag.
Chin wag. All right, now's the opportunity. We're going to have intermission for a chin wag. But as we go, are there anything that we've talked about right now that sticks in your mind that you think's really important?
So I've just got one thing I've found again, that everyone in this room has their own story, and everyone in this room is very interesting. And if we only give each other the time of day to sit down and listen to everyone, has something pretty magnificent to offer, and we're all different. So how cool is that?
Hold on, one more comment.
Yeah, sorry, John. I'm going to put this one back to you. Just tying in the stigma to a more formal sort of therapy, like professional help, I sort of think that it takes the pressure off your relationship because you're able to offload to people who are trained to be professional listeners.
So thanks, Ben. That's a great segue as we go into intermission, because the topic we're talking about after is support team, informal or formal. Do we just rely on our partners? Do we need service providers? Do we need qualified people? So thanks, mate.
This podcast has been made possible thanks to our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Farm Business Resilience Program team. The Farm Business Resilience Program supports farmers to improve their business acumen and achieve their business goals. The Farm Business Resilience team offers business coaching, farm tours, networking events, and the creation of resources for farmers across New South Wales. A particularly big shout out and thanks to Seraphim Machinery for supporting this particular leg of the Mate Helping Mate Conversations Tour. They're getting behind this podcast so that when you're spending hours in the tractor, you have something positive to fill your ears with. Seraphim Machinery have a passion for introducing innovation into the agricultural industry and providing customers with exceptional service and quality products at the best prices. Each day, they strive to be the seeding and tillage specialists.
This segment is about support team, support networks. Your support networks become very important because the more people you talk to, the more options, the more finite is your identification of the problem. So in regards to support team, what kind of things, you've touched on them already, your exercise mates, your bike mates.
Yeah, thanks, John. Working in the farming industry, it's a real battle sometimes. You're at war with the environment and all the fluctuations in prices and things that can affect your business from outside. So you can do or have all the right strategies and systems that you've used and developed over the years, but the weather will let you down. And that is pretty hard to take when you've worked your butt off and you know you're not going to get the result. So if you were to deal with that sort of thing on your own, year in, year out, I think you'd cash it in and go and do something else. So there's got to be more to what we do than just making money out of a bit of dirt and a bit of rain. And what I've found is integral in my support network is talking to my neighbours and my suppliers. If you've got one person in your life, apart from your wife, your spouse, that is prepared to come and sit down with you and have a cup of coffee and listen to you whinging and bitching, that is the only support you need is to someone to sit down and just listen to you without having to, again, fix your problem. But listen, and that just gets you above the water that you're sinking in, and away you go again.
So, Kim, the support team is not just necessarily in mental health. So your support team is in all different areas? What kind of areas?
Yeah, absolutely. Always growing up, my mum actually always said there was no problem that couldn't be overcome with the support of the right people. Finding the right people is not always easy. But, I think in lots of aspects of our life, if you surround yourself with the right people, you've got the right accountant on board, you've got the right agronomist on board, you know, you've got the right employees, that sort of thing, that always means that that there's going to be better chance of a successful outcome.
How do you find these right people? What kind of support or network do you use to do that?
I think, obviously word of mouth has a big part to play, but I think we've got to be really mindful where we source our information from too, that we're using reliable sources of information. And it is about making sure that whether it's online or in print format or whether the people that you're talking to are reliable sources of information, that they actually know what they're talking about.
Me? I usually go to the wife first. She's my rock. She's knows everything that's going on. She's a great support for me, but also I've got friends that I can duck out to. I think everyone should belong to a club, a group, or have a hobby, you know. If we got things like that, it makes you social. You get up, you've got to go to a meeting, you've got to go to a meet, or you've got to go do something. It sort of gets you up off the lounge. I think just meeting with friends is a great support group, you know. Having the same sort of interests, you get there. I'm in a car club and I'm also in the Collingambly Pistol Club out there, and we get together and,
I nearly got caught up with the Pistol Club. I thought it might have been a boys thing, like a...
Oh, yeah. Drink till midnight.
Beg your pardon.
Pistol dawn.
So, Lexi, the same kind of cape. Do you think that being part of football club or pushing yourself at the different levels... Where's your best level? Do you use qualified people, or do you tend to find it easier if you cotton on that you're drifting down to go via the girls' club in italics or the footy club?
No, probably I've been probably through all the professionals, and I found the best are probably my friends and family or the girls at the footy club. But, yeah, a story that really sticks out to me is when our family had a really rough time, I was probably wagging school like I did quite regularly, working at the butchers, trying to stay away from school as much as I could. A lady popped in, and I think it was maybe 3 or 4 months down the track, and she popped in with a bunch of flowers and a candle, and that really stuck out to me, that she really, not only did she not have to say anything, she just gave us those, and we knew that we were sort of looked after and cared for, and that we were always at the back of their mind.
And so, once again, it's really interesting that what is impactful on one person may not necessarily be the same on another. So we've got to look at how we go about supporting other people, but also in the people that we look for in support. It can come from all areas of where you're at. So what's your goal? So is there anybody out there that's used professional people, say, for instance? Okay, we got some, we got Peter up the back.
So I've used professional help when I have been unwell. At a very low point, I gravitated towards, I'm a very gregarious person, so like how do I know that I need people around me? And I gravitated towards things that I felt were going to make me feel like I was giving back a little bit. So I got involved in things like there's some people here that I got involved in a car rally that I thought I'd be able to help them. And at the end of the very first one, so I've done 7 years in a row with them. At the very end of the first one, I realised that I'd done absolutely nothing for them, but they had given me absolutely everything. Never limit yourself to who you can get involved with. To go and do volunteering and things like that, where it made me feel like I was doing something worthwhile.
So, Pete, how challenging was it to actually seek qualified help? I mean, was it you had no choice or...?
Pushed a little. Yeah, pushed a little. I think I spent many years with undiagnosed mental health. But there came a point where I had to go and seek professional help. My work insisted on it. And I think the most important thing that I got from that was I got a psychologist who I have a relationship with. I can send her messages at any time and she'll check back in with me. If I send her a message, she knows that she has to check back in with me. So having someone like that in my corner is very important.
I've got a good story. I've done a couple of Active Farmers bike rides. Last year we did a ride around Tasmania and there was a couple of jokers, as you'd call them. Started cycling together purely because one of the guys was a builder. And he went round to the other guy's place to fix a door that he'd punched in. And he didn't ask too many questions. He repaired the door and he was just about to leave. And the bloke said, look, thanks for fixing the door. Here's a beer. And they had a beer and he ended up telling him that he had a few anger issues and his wife had left him with the kids and just unloaded on this fellow. And then he told his story and it almost mirrored each other's story. So what they decided to do was to be each other's support team. So whenever one or the other would get into a spot, or something pretty bad would happen, they'd look out for each other, ring each other up and say, we're going for a bike ride in the morning. So they'd go for a bike ride, but they're mad. They'd go for about an 8-hour bike ride. But that was their solution.
I didn't think there was anybody sillier than you getting up at 4:30.
Yeah, no, there is. And they ride hills, they're mad. But these two blokes, after probably 5 years of doing this, supporting each other through some pretty low times, using that activity as a way of getting over the problem, and it works every time for them. If it wasn't for that builder to come around and fix his door, the next day he was going to end the whole show. So that's how close he was to finishing the show for him.
I think one of the things, where that story started though, those two people were perfect strangers. But the thought of getting up and speaking in front of people that you know or offloading to someone that you know, sometimes that can be a really reassuring thing, but at other times... having a professional person and I think it's about having a toolkit where, okay, this might be okay at this level, but maybe if things escalate or if that's not working, you need to have a plan B. And I think that's we need, whilst we're talking a lot about informal support networks and how that maybe helps us maintain our mental well-being, we need to be really mindful not to be dismissive of the role that professionals play and the fact that some people aren't comfortable talking to a friend, but when you've got a perfect stranger comes around to fix the hole that you've just I mean, you're probably not, if your brother's a builder, you're probably not going to invite him around to come and fix your door because you don't want him to know that you punched it in.
How have you gone through your journey? Are you happy with people? I realise you've still got your ups and downs, yeah, but in dealing with it, has your support network made you feel richer in the scheme of things?
Yeah, I'm a lot more positive with things like that now, a lot more stronger. When our first situation happened, I didn't want to talk to anyone, didn't want to do anything, you know. I'd just sit in the backyard, you know. But now I'm a lot more confident.
Here, it's a big step.
I'm here. This was, as I said, I like going for walks, you know, and to get rid of anxiety or any of those sort of feelings and that sort of stuff. By the time you do a 2K walk or whatever, you come back, you've got a whole different mindset. So
how many steps have you done this last week, Jody?
Well, I've got three pairs of shoes I've worn out from athlete's foot. But no, I think, yeah, richer for it.
I'm a lot richer. When our family went through our struggles, I see some familiar faces here that were at the house when things went down, and they're all here tonight. So
yeah,
we've got a very good support network.
Okay, I'm at a bit of a crossroads here, but I'm hoping that a good bloke in the audience might help me out. And he's had his ups and downs. He's required, and he might talk about some of his support teams, but he's in a position where he's been acting as a support for other people. Chris?
Yeah, what Rob mentioned with his mate with the door there and supporting friends in similar situations, it really helps. I've had a friend of mine's been talking to me a bit lately, and I'm no expert by any means, but you just the fact you have a conversation and support each other, and if you're feeling down, just get on the phone and ring your mate and have a yarn. It works. It makes a difference, and it helps you too by trying to help somebody else, even if it's in a small way, you know what I mean? It makes you feel better, and you work together and you build each other up. If we all just talk to each other more, it helps a lot.
And what if this fella comes at you with a problem that is too difficult for you, an ordinary joker, to deal with? What do you do with that?
Hey, well, that doesn't take very long because I don't know much about it, but we put them in. I'll try to put people in touch with blokes like you or Rock or, you know, someone sort of next level, and then obviously, you know, you're way better at it than me, and then you can point them in the right direction, you know, people like you or you know, the rural outreach counselling or all the things on this chart here, yeah.
So you need to understand I'm not a qualified person, okay? I'm only confident about talking about this because I got bit on the ass myself and I'm still kicking. And if somebody like Chris presents somebody to me, if it's too difficult for me, I go to qualified people. I deal all over, so I'm dealing with qualified people with the Royal Flying Doctor stuff. I'll use who I believe are effective and important at that. I'm also going to put the hard word on another joker over here, and with no names, Patrick. The story, remember about old mate when you rang me up?
It happened 4 or 5 years ago. We had a pretty good friend who was struggling with alcohol, depression, suicidal. Couple of times we went, and he was also a person who punched a few holes in the walls in a brand new home. Now this one day, well, one evening it was, I had his wife ring me up, and he said, "I think you better get out here." He said, "He's going to climb the rafter." And I said, "What rafter?" He said, "Well, he's tying the rope to the rafter." And I said, "I'll be there in a sec." And anyhow, got there, and yeah, "What are you doing, buddy?" He said, "No, this is it. I've had enough. No more." It really got into a wrestling match. And, I wouldn't get off him. I was just on him, and there was no way he was going to get me off. So our friendship has become greater than ever. I had to seek some professional help to get him on the right track. And but there is a time that I think, although you can help someone and encourage them and getting better and being with them, there is a time that you have to take that step, overstep, I suppose, overstep the mark, and try and get some professional help for them. And they either love you for it afterwards or they hate you. But, you know, it's better than losing someone.
This fella's still kicking.
He's going well.
So I suppose the point I was trying to make, that in the support teams we need informal, which I regard as mates, families, whatever else, and formal. The other thing that's out of whack a bit for me is that these two fellas have extremely good relationships with their missus. I'm nearly the opposite, and I think most blokes are the same. The worst thing for me is that most blokes do not realise that their partner, their missus, and this is more male-female stuff from my point of view, are their best mate. And to a certain extent, we tend to do the opposite of what they tell because we don't want to be bossed about by the wife or whatever. And that's what I did. I ended up seeking professional help just to shut up my missus. But by that stage, my mental health was that bad. My brain was so right, it had dried out my joints. So it had caused physical defects in my body, if you will. But I went to the doctor to shut her up, okay, because I thought the doctor was going to tell her I was dying from cancer, even though I didn't tell her I thought I was dying of cancer. But these are the challenges. Have any of yous done anything like that, the opposite to what your closest have performed? Is anybody out there?
Thank you, John. Marvellous job you're doing here. My story is one of ever-increasing battle with finance, droughts, fires, blah, blah, blah. And then one night I had a blue with my wife of nearly 49 years now. This was 4 years ago. I'd also been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and that didn't help much. But the straw that broke the camel's back was the blue with the cook. I didn't get much sleep that night. The next morning, flew out of bed, out the back door, hopped in the ute, and she was right after me. She knew what was going on. And as I say, we've been married for 49 years, going on 50 years. And something that I've never told my wife to do, and I told her to go forth and multiply in a very unsavoury manner. Anyway, I hopped in the ute, and her immediate reaction was to ring this gentleman here and David Post. I got down the farm, unlocked the gate, drove in there, and lo and behold, there's this bloody cow laying on its side, legs out. And I thought, shit, I'm not going to get a break here. I was on the way to the hay shed to do exactly what Joe's mate was going to do. Anyway, I wheeled over it and had a three-day-old calf at foot. And I took the time to drive back into town, got some calcium borogluconate to put under the skin, drove back down there, put the needle under the skin and stood there like an idiot with the bag in the air like this. So 3/4 of an hour later, the vet arrived and we had a bit of a talk about suicide, a female vet, and she said, Wayne, she said, you're not alone. Anyway, we talked and talked, and anyway, we thought we'd examine the cow, and I said, well, I'll walk over and lay on the cow while you do the examination. I walked over to the cow and the bloody thing got up and walked away. So that saved me. And I thank John and all my mates at home. It was amazing the amount of help that a fella can do when he's in distress. And also, I don't mind talking to people about prostate cancer or suicide. So thanks very much for the opportunity, John.
I had the pleasure of meeting that lovely man in the intermission. Look, I think anyone that has had a personal struggle themselves, being able to share that with anyone is a really, really brave move. So thanks for sharing it with a room full of people.
Well done.
Say thanks also, Wayne. It takes a lot of guts and well done.
Sorry to interrupt. We've just got a couple of texts that have come through. If you struggle with communication, how can you communicate that you need help?
I'm pretty sure that there are text messaging services now if you don't feel like you can actually have a conversation, if you know, finding the time is also part of the barrier.
I know from my line of work there is some services that you can remain anonymous, so I think that is definitely helpful if you are struggling with communication.
So obviously this communication business is a real issue, big issue. And what we've got to understand is that when we're flat, when we're low, what's the first symptom of mental health? Isolation, withdrawal. So that's where, as individuals, we need to understand where we are on the scale of things. If we're reasonable well, but we feel ourselves sinking, that's when you've got to do. You can't wait till you're flat because you just don't have the energy or the willpower to communicate. Then it comes back on your support team. We say to our mate, oh, how do you think he's travelling? I don't think he's going too good. And he'll say, oh, no, he's all right. He's like that all the time. But he might say, yeah, I've been thinking the same thing. But we haven't been game as individuals to go. Remember what we talked about? Family, community, united we stand. Well, it's the same caper. To get rolling, sometimes we need groups of supporters. Would you agree with that? I mean, I think this man in his butcher shop sees it. He sees people coming in.
True. Yeah, no, you can sort of, you can see by their body language. As you said, people don't want to talk at their weakest, at their lowest point. You know, they're sort of more reserved. And the more you ask questions, sometimes you get blank faces and nothing.
And I mean, that's why I say, are you okay? They ask you to ask it again. If I say to somebody, how you going, mate? His normal reaction is, I'm okay. But I mean, why did you ask the question in the first place? It's because you know the bloke and he's not his normal self. Yeah, mate?
The thing we've got to watch out for, in my point of view, is everyone's talking about the person being flat. Mental health, after you've been through it for quite a while, you know how to put on the face. You can turn up to this and everyone thinks you're okay. It's your close friends that know the difference in you when you're putting a face on and when you're not. People that have been going through mental health for quite a while put on the best faces. You can think everything's all right, they're right, but it's just little things that you'll see a little bit different. That's what you've got to watch out for, is just those little small things.
And it's not necessarily the talk, is it? Human nature is that we don't do anything till the shit hits the fan. We get into negative thinking, negative patterns, away we go. Another one?
Yeah, we just had another one on the text line. What should we do if we think someone needs help?
Yep, stay with them for sure. Keep eyes on them. And if you think they are sort of at a crisis point, then a few sets of eyes would be helpful. So if there's a few trusted people or somebody else that you can call on.
Yep.
Yeah, what I'd like to say is if you think someone is got a problem, don't give up on it, because I've had the bad experience of having a last phone call of someone, and that's what you don't want. So if you think someone's not right, pursue it. You don't know. Someone could be ringing up for a yarn, and I had that bad experience. It was his last yarn. And just pursue it and see what you can do. Just if you think there's an issue, don't give up on it.
So when I was considering that bad decision, my perception was that nobody gave a rat's ass for little John Harper. My wife didn't love me, whatever else, yet she was the one that saved me, and that there was no future. So one of the best strategies you've got, if you can't do, face-to-face is the best, is showing somebody that you care, because that's our perception, is nobody cares. How do you do it? You take time. You've got to make time. Everybody says we're too busy. We've got to start actioning care for our friends, our mates, whatever else. Because as you're going down, when you get into crisis, you're there. Yeah, go on.
If you got 5 minutes, flick through your phone, look at your contact list. Grew up with a lot of blokes at home, Darlington Point. A lot of them have moved away. You don't hear from them for a year, 2 years. Flick through your contacts. Give them a call. Like, touch base, see how they're going. Blokes with divorces, kids, they won't talk to other mates. So, you know, just start the conversation with them. Look for your contacts. Make the phone call.
So that's important. These random calls often do it. We do stuff called like minute for a mate. It's the same thing. You're working, you're in the truck or something, you just call on the UHF. How are you battling, buddy? You know, fair dinkum? And then they might open up. It's those kind of things that are very important. Yes, Lara, another one?
Someone actually has offered a strategy, is practicing gratitude. So every day they get into a group and they ask themselves what they're grateful for. A couple of us suffer from mental health issues, and it helps us set up our day in a positive manner, which is really nice. I know John's a big one on reflection as well.
Is that what you do when you go down a riverbank and sink it sit in the sun under the trees and stuff.
Yeah, you've got to think positive. Getting
down Are you thinking about the shit or are you thinking about the good things?
No, you're trying to think about the good things. The last thing you want is think about the shit because that'll just drag you down further. Positive mind's a very, very strong thing, I can tell you. A negative mind is also strong but in a different sort of way, you know. So I think, yeah, get up, comb your hair, chuck on a nice shirt, put your aftershave on, head out the door with a smile. That's the way.
Can I first and foremost get you lot to show your appreciation for these buggers that had the guts to get up here and put a bit out there? Yeah, I like that even better when you stand up and show them because I'm telling you, it's bloody tough, especially in your home patch, is airing some of this stuff. And I want to thank yous for doing that and for sharing some of your strategies. I hope it wasn't as bad as going to the dentist and getting your teeth pulled, whatever.
I would like to just give a big applause to John as well, himself, for doing what he does.
Well done.
I knew he'd hate that, but it's necessary.
Final things. Have you got any wisdom from our panellists?
I just want to challenge everyone to go home tonight and have a cold shower. It doesn't have to be a long one. Just get a little bit of weird in your life. Get a little bit of edgy stuff happening. That'd be great. Thank you.
Kim?
Oh, look, you know, I guess it's a good thing, but it's also one of my downfalls. I have to be mindful that sometimes I actually have to say no to things.
So in one regard, you would say that be careful of stress and be strong enough to be able to say no because that keeps your stress levels down a bit if you're an overcommitter. Jody?
Just be kind to each other. Just, you don't know what anyone's going through. Give them a smile.
And what's yours, Lexi? Be on your team, not the opponents?
Well, you've got a few weeks' grace, but no, mine is just no good comes from your comfort zone and this is well out of mine. But thanks, everyone, for coming and hopefully we shed some light on the situation.
But please remember the tips of the panellists. This is for the betterment of your communities. We in the bush, rural and remote, know how to help ourselves. We are resilient. We can recover from shit. Thank you.
This podcast was a Room 3 production and is brought to you by our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Farm Business Resilience Program team, and Seraphim Machinery, your seeding and tillage specialists. Episodes of this podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts by searching for Mate Helping Mate and hitting subscribe. If you've liked what you've heard, make sure you leave a rating to make it easier for others to find us. Better yet, share it with your friends and family to start a conversation about mental health in the bush. This podcast was produced by Erin Johnson and Lara Shearer and recorded and directed, edited by AJ Clifford for Room 3, a production company that works with not-for-profits and social enterprise. Original music by Southwark Sounds and stock by Soundstripe. Also, a massive thanks to John Harper, who for over the years has travelled this country tirelessly working to improve mental health in rural and remote Australia. And of course, his awesome offsider, Michelle, for her continued support for John and his work. We'd also like to thank and acknowledge those of you who have donated to Mate Helping Mate's GoFundMe campaign. Your commitment to seeing John do his thing has been integral to our work. In finishing, a reminder that this podcast featured general information only, and we recommend that you get independent advice from a qualified professional. Mate Helping Mate has links on the website with a number of great service providers across the country. Head to matehelpingmate.org.au. If you're struggling with your mental health now and need to talk, call Lifeline anytime on 13 11 14. Thank you for listening and we hope this has helped you.